then, in 1980, so that's 40 years ago, quite a while. And why did I start practicing Zazen? That's the question. Well, I met a teacher and he was very convincing and very quiet and very the opposite of like a show business type person. He was very, very scholarly. He's written many books and I believed in him and I trusted that he was telling the truth. So he talked about the necessity for one, if they wanted to take up the path of Zen Buddhism, they must commit themselves to practicing meditation every day because it is, he said, the spine, make it the spine of your life. And just that sitting in the morning or whatever time you choose to sit actually opens your life out in a way that you will not know about until you do it. He said, even if you don't feel like sitting or meditating, we call it sitting. So when I say sitting, I mean meditating. He said, just get up and you just go and do the meditation. You don't think, do I feel like it? I don't feel like it. I've got a cold. I've got to do some more work on that lecture I'm meant to be preparing. No, 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 no. You just get up, just go, and you sit in your special place and you meditate. And then you go, your day opens out. So that's what I did from 1980 because I thought, no, this man knows what he's talking about. And he was correct for me. It was the way to go. Before that, I was meditating, but I did it when I felt like it, when I felt peaceful, when I was on the beach or when I was in a beautiful place. I think, oh, I can meditate here. But that's not what he was saying. He's saying it's a practice. The more you practice, you know, the deeper you can go. So he actually convinced me that in our instrument, in practicing Zen, if we have an instrument, it's our life. Our life is our practice. And what we do on the cushion sitting in this posture is for our whole life. It's not just for the cushion and then we get an experience and then we go back into life and we're rude to people. No, 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 no. It's what we experience on the cushion in meditation we bring to our life, that we're open, that we're compassionate, that we're generous, and we're willing to not know a lot. Whereas before, one might have thought, I have to know everything. No, no, no. One of the wonderful things about Zen practice is it's about not knowing. And in fact, there's a saying, not knowing is most intimate. So I'm going to just stop talking about that and just do this thing, which I love doing. So this is a jar and it's got some earth in it, which I got from my garden. And it's like a metaphor, a visual metaphor for the mind. This is our mind most of the time. It's full of stuff. It's busy. And we're very distracted by what's going on in our mind. So meditation, if you like, is putting the jar down and sitting down, bringing your attention, bringing my attention to the breath and noticing the way the mind is wanting to get my attention, having ideas, you know, coming up with stuff. And I'm able to just smile, notice, and let it go and be here with just the sounds around, just the feeling of the cool breath, the cool breeze on my skin, exactly what is happening now, not in here, but throughout everywhere else. So then sitting, meditating, in the beginning for me, it was breath counting for 2 years, a deep breath in, and then one, and then a deep breath in, then two, to 10, and then back to one. And that's a practice that is very, very simple, but incredibly hard. And I teach that now to many, many students, and like me, they find they are liable to be counting up to 432 if they've forgotten to keep track of it, or they've forgotten to count at all. And they begin, we begin to understand how our mind is so quickly distracted, so quickly taken away from just being with this breath and this count. So sitting even for 10 minutes, we have a sense of breathing as the world. Breathing is all we're doing. That's it, breathing. And the birds are screeching and the wind is blowing and we're right here with all that. And this way, the thoughts and feelings that are these little items in this jar become very small elements in this vast mystery of silence and depth and clarity. And so the way of the Tao, the way of the Buddha, is the way of clarity and intimacy and brilliance and joy. And we see through our practice how we separate ourselves from the universe, from life, from everything, by our ideas about it. And over time, as we practice, if we practice diligently with a lot of discipline every day and go on, you know, retreats maybe once or twice a year to deepen, we develop the ability to keep coming back to the moment time and time again and pay attention to what's in front of our eyes. So there's no separation of subject and object anymore, of me here and you guys out there. The gap is gone and we're completely intimate. So I would say, you could say that Zen practice is a practice of intimacy, of closing the gap between this person here and the universe. And in every moment of life, as I said before. And the practice of meditation goes hand in hand with the ethical aspects of Buddhism, the precepts which we practice and talk about once a month and share. How do we practice not indulging in anger? How do we practice not sparing the Dharma assets? And so we have that as a discussion. So I think it'd be nice if we could actually have a time to have some meditation together. I'd love that. And I just want to show you this, the jar at this point. A lot of the stuff's floated to the top and a lot of the stuff's floated to the bottom, but we have in the middle, the most of it is clarity. It's clarity because things have settled. The mind has settled. A few more things about Zen practice that are really fundamental about meditation in Zen practice is the posture. It's very, very important to have a very strong upright posture and to have an image of the top of the head being held up to heaven by a rope. So you're very tall from the waist up. And I'm sitting in a chair tonight, otherwise I wouldn't be up in front of the camera. But that's fine. I do meditation in the chair a lot. It's just that the feet have to be firmly on the ground so that the feet and my where I'm sitting on the chair become a tripod of strength and the upper body becomes very open and tall. And the chin slightly in. And I keep my eyes half shut looking down. So I encourage you to either practice with what your normal practice of meditation is. I don't want to get in the way of it. If you'd like to try the breath counting practice, it's, as I said, complete presence with the breath all the way in. And then, wow, all the way out. And there's nothing in the universe except that one. And then complete attention with the breath as it comes in again, and then two. So I'll ring the bell 3 times to start a sitting experience practice, and then I'll ring it twice, or once actually. I'll ring it once at the end, which will be maybe we'll sit for 10 or so minutes. And then you might have some questions or comments about your meditation. And if you haven't, I'll say some more. That's okay. And if you can hear a noise, a strange noise in coming through, it's about 30 cockatoos that come every night to our trees and make a big noise. So they're singing sutras for us. Okay, here we go. We dedicate our meditation to all who suffer in illness, in poverty, in war. We have some time if anyone would like a question, to ask a question or make a comment about anything that you've experienced in your meditation tonight or at any other time, or just anything you'd like to ask or share. It would be wonderful to hear from you. So you'll need to unmute, probably.
If anyone would like to share, or if anyone has any questions, you can unmute yourselves and just speak.
Hi, Julie. Just want to ask. I feel like there's an echo. Sorry. I feel like I always encounter the problem of getting sleepy when I meditate. So, do you have any tips to suggest to face that problem?
Well, Jay, I don't know what your life is like. Maybe you're very tired and maybe you need to have more rest. Because feeling sleepy in Zazen is it's not something that I experienced personally myself. I feel wide awake. It's sort of like the opposite. So I'm just wondering, how are you meditating? What are you actually doing when you meditate?
I normally start with breathing, mm-hmm. and then if because breathing is, sometimes it's easier for me to get distracted, then I will change to just listen to the surroundings, listen to any noise.
Yeah.
And if that really doesn't work, if I still feel sleepy, I'll just open my eyes.
Well, definitely open your eyes. There's no rules about having your eyes closed. I mean, in our tradition, people actually sit with their eyes open more than they have them closed because of the sleep, because of, you know, it can be quite lovely to have a sleepy meditation. And you do see people sitting nodding off. So definitely open your eyes. I think that's a really, really, really good way to stay awake. Do you concentrate very hard when you're breathing and being with your breath? I mean, is there a lot of effort or concentration involved, or do you just be there breathing?
Yeah, just breathing. If sometimes it works if I try to breathe very, very hardly, but then I heard from a few people that in meditation, in Buddhism, you're not supposed to control your breathing.
I don't know what that means, control your breathing.
So I'll try to breathe in a certain pace and in certain, with like to breathe more intensely.
I see.
Yeah.
When I teach breathing, it's entirely what your breath is, normal and natural. If your breathing is shallow, your breathing is shallow. Gradually it will lengthen, gradually it'll settle. I also love, there's the gutta that Thich Nhat Hanh sort of adapted from the Buddha's own teaching, which I think is really, really good, and I can't hand it out to you tonight, but I'll just say what it is. So you sit with breathing in, I know I am breathing in. Breathing out, I know I am breathing out. And then from then on, and the in-breath you go in, and on the out-breath you say out. And you focus on those two words for as long as you feel you need to. And then you move on to breathing in, I'm breathing deep. Breathing out, I'm breathing slow. Deep, slow. And then the next one is breathing in, I feel calm. Breathing out, I feel ease. Calm, ease. Then breathing in, I smile. Breathing out, I release. Smile, release. And then finally, breathing in, I know I am in the present moment. Breathing out, I know it is a wonderful moment. Present moment, wonderful moment. And I can sit with that for 25 minutes. Like, I don't time it. I just, when I'm ready to move on to the next couple of lines, I do. And always I'm delivered right there to the present moment, no matter how distracted or tired I am. So that's a really good grounding practice for the first time, the first period of meditation. You know, there might, the next period you probably don't need to do that. You can just be practicing with your breath. But certainly open your eyes if you feel sleepy. I really recommend eyes open. Yeah. And the other thing, I was interested that you said you sometimes just listen to sound. You're just being aware of sound. And that's a very strong practice as well for us. So we have a koan, which is, who is the master of hearing this sound? And you practice with sound and just completely open to sound. And there's a lovely koan from about China, 12th century. A monk introduced himself to the teacher, Xuansha, and he said, I've just entered this monastery. Please show me where to enter the way, the Buddha way. And Xuansha says, do you hear the sound of the valley stream? And the monk says, yes. And Xuansha says, enter there. So sounds, being open to sound is a wonderful, wonderful practice. Not choosing not to like that sound and to love that sound, but being completely open to all the sounds as they arise and fall away. That's a really wonderful practice. So you're already doing that. You might ask yourself from time to time, who is hearing this sound? That's a question that we ask. Yeah. We work with koans as well in our meditation. It's not just breath counting or Thich Nhat Hanh's gutta or but we take up a koan, which is, you know, a mondo, a dialogue usually between a teacher and a student, and we focus on the key, the nub of it, the heart of it, and sit with that until it's resolved. So that's a part of what we do in our meditation as well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have any questions? If not, I'll ask one.
Livia.
You mentioned just now, like, practicing with sound is a good way to practice.
Yeah.
Sometimes find it hard to concentrate because I get distracted very easily.
Yeah, that's right.
I have to, like, I mean, if I were to practice meditation, like, I have to really practice in a very quiet space, and I get distracted with even like the slightest sound. So do you have any, I guess, tips on how to just acknowledge it but not to attach to it?
Yeah. Well, completely opening out to the sounds means that this monkey mind, this noisy mind, which is always going chatter, 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 da da da, tomorrow, what am I going to do, da da da, all that stuff, rests, goes to sleep, is quiet, and all you are is with the sounds, as the sounds. So there's no distraction there. You're intimate and present and not separate from the sounds. So they're not taking you from anywhere. They're just completely there and you're together like that. It's if there are some very irritating sounds, I understand. I can remember practicing meditation one day not so long ago, and starting, it was early in the morning, and suddenly a chainsaw started. And I wasn't coming, we weren't using a chainsaw, and that neighbour wasn't, and that neighbour wasn't, but somebody was using a chainsaw, and I just could not continue sitting. I had to get up, and I had to look, go out into the garden and look and see, where is this chainsaw? And I saw 10 people swarming up a beautiful eucalyptus tree with ropes and a chainsaw, starting to cut it down. And I knew they didn't have permission to do that. And I said, stop, you know. I wanted to save the tree. That was more important at that time than meditating. And then that's what happened. The council, I rang the council came down. Stop, they said. You cannot cut this tree. And it stopped. So sometimes it's good to be distracted. let's say you hear a child screaming in pain. You respond to that.
Mm.
You don't just sit there going, whoa.
Yes.
See, I see.
Anyone else has any questions? Since we still have some time.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What is your advice if, because now I'm having running nose and I find it quite disturbing. Yeah, when meditating.
You're disturbing who? Yourself or somebody else?
Myself, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because like running nose,
yeah.
Yeah, and I'm doing I was doing the breathing meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's like quite disturbing to breathe.
Yeah. Well, you know, I get hay fever too. That sounds like hay fever. I don't know. Maybe it's a cold. But I just, you know, put some Kleenexes up my nose.
Oh, okay. And you can then use mouth, is it?
Just in here, you know. And then you can breathe through the Kleenex and you don't drip all over yourself. So you can just deal with it, you know. It's not a big problem.
Okay.
I think it's probably all right. But I mean, sometimes you do have a drippy nose, or you're coughing, or you're sneezing, or all sorts of things are happening in your body. But you just keep sitting. It's not the end of the world. But if it is very bad, then you do get up and do something.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember once being in a meditation group and my nose was dripping, and I was trying to, I had a hanky and I kept trying to sort of wipe my nose. And the person who was the leader of this particular meditation group said in a very loud, stern voice, "Let it drip." Oh, so shocked. And then on, it just went dripping, dripping, dripping. It was terrible. I'd never say that. Never say "let it drip."
Okay.
I have a handkerchief in my pocket all the time. Always have a handkerchief. And I need to, I use it. Yes.
That's
not a problem.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your advice. Okay.
So my teacher was a wonderful American man called Robert Aitken, and he's got many books. All the books on the shelf are all written by him. And his first book was his PhD, or his master's actually, sorry, looking at Basho, the haiku, the Japanese haiku poet. But then after that, he wrote this book, which is Taking the Path of Zen. So if you want to see what Aitken Roshi says about practicing Zen, it's a lovely, lovely book, really well written. And, you know, it's probably in the library at New South, I think. I don't know, but. He's got lots and lots of really interesting books. He writes with great clarity. Yeah, he's really good. He's dead now, so he's not going to write any more books. So he was a prisoner of war. He was a conscientious objector in World War II, and he went off. He said, "I'll help. I'll do something. I'll help." So he sort of enlisted in some civilian form of help of service. And went to Guam, which is an island in the Pacific, to help build a an airport there, and all the soldiers on Guam, the Americans were all then taken into by the Japanese, came and just took them all and put them in camps in Japan. So he spent the war in a camp in Japan, and he was very interested in Japanese culture. So he learned a lot while he was in the prisoner of war camp, because he was always interested in Japanese poetry and culture. And so that was an open door for him to just enter much more fully into Zen Buddhism. So it's interesting how, and we were saying before, I was saying to Olivia how, you know, COVID has enabled us to sit with Zoom, do practice in Zoom like you guys do, and then people from far away, like all over the world, could get involved and can suddenly be part of the group again. And that's a really positive about COVID, that we can, you know, we can meet up again. There's no distance anymore. So has anybody else got a question? Can be a silly question. I love a silly question. Or a very important one.
Anyone else has any questions?
No.
Or you can also share comments.
I was wondering, Jillian.
Yeah.
What are the things that you usually focus on when trying to meditate?
When trying to meditate, what do I sit with?
How do you usually meditate?
Well, if I've been in the middle of a busy period of life, I always sit with those lines that I mentioned from Thich Nhat Hanh: in, out, deep, slow, calm, ease, smile, release, present moment, wonderful moment. And I sit with that, and it brings me from jumble mind, noisy mind, to quietness and presence. If I just get up out of bed and I just go straight to sitting and I just breathe and I'm with the sounds, that's what I do. That's my practice. So if I'm sitting with a student and the student's practicing with a koan, I might take that koan up for myself so that we can meet together over that koan. Like today, a student wanted to be sitting with the question, what is my original face before my mother and father were born, which is quite an important koan. And so I'll be sitting with that. Before I meet or talk to him again, I'll be sitting with that. So it just depends, really. It's very dependent on sometimes I don't sit with anything. It's just, I just sit there. And mostly I sit with Mu, which is a primary koan, which I've been sitting with for 35 years. And the question, it's a koan which comes from Zhao Zhou in 10th century China. And a monk asks, Zhao Zhou, does a dog have Buddha nature? And Zhao Zhou says, moo, which means no, or no thing. And the student has to come to understand or resolve, what is that moo? And is asked again and again and again, show me moo, what is moo? So I sit with moo because it has such resonance and it's a powerful koan still, always for me. So does that answer your question? It's sort of...
Not oh, one. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So the that koan, another time, another monk asked Zhao Zhou, does the monk have Buddha nature? And Zhao Zhou said, yes. So you can see it's not about yes and no. It's going beyond yes and no, beyond this or that. So I love I just love Zen Buddhism. I love the fact that it's about your experience. It's not all cognitive and it's not all conceptual, you know, like let that go. It's about sitting, experiencing the silence, and then experiencing that, you know, complete unity with everything. And this tiny little self that thought it was, you know, the center of the universe. is just part of a huge, you know, mass of stuff. So Dogen has also a wonderful thing. To study Buddhism is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. And this realization continues endlessly. So forgetting the self, getting out of the way, allowing oneself to be, you know, just part of the lot, the whole. And I'll just give you one more lovely thing. In Zen, there's a saying that when the Buddha realized, had his realization experience, he looked up and there was the morning star. Like, that was shattered him completely. And he is said to have said, "Ah, now I see that all beings are the Tathagata, are just as they are. It is only our delusions and attachments that keep us or prevent us from seeing into this fact." So the delusions and attachments are the stuff we carry with us all the time, get in the way, that make a barrier around us between everything else. And the practice that the Buddha showed there is the practice of becoming intimate, as I said before, completely intimate with all things. So it's a wonderful practice, great joy and enormous amount of gratitude for all the people who've carried the practice all through, from the time of the Buddha all the way through to China, you know, and then to Japan and then to Australia. Amazing. It got here, and that we're going to keep it going, I hope, and help others, I hope. So it feels like that's, if there's no more questions, I mean, we've got 5 minutes, but there's not many people with questions.
I just want to ask about walking meditation. I've heard about that, but like, can you like briefly talk about like what do we concentrate?
I'd love to do that. We sit for 25 minutes and then we always get up and walk for about 10. We call it Kinhin, and Kinhin is much more difficult than sitting meditation because so much is moving. With sitting meditation, your whole nervous system is got nothing to do because you're balanced, you're still, and you can just breathe and be. But when you get up and start walking, you can touch it, you're feeling, you're looking, you're touching the ground. It's very distracting, much more distracting. So what I do is I count my breaths on each step. So I might walk 3 steps on an in-breath and 3 on an out-breath. It doesn't matter. I just key it. I go step 1, 2, 3, very much focus on that and stay with that. And as well as that, being incredibly mindful of the foot on the floor, so that experience of foot to floor is vivid and strong. And looking ahead and not going around in the brain again, not, you know, thinking about stuff, just focusing on the breath and the step as I go up. So that's how I do it. And we hold our hands in a mudra to remind us that we're actually meditating. We're not just wandering about, you know. So I do that when I walk down the street. If I'm walking from A to B, I can just do walking meditation. I don't make such an obvious mudra like this one. I just can hold my hands like that down by my side, but I practice keying my breathing to my steps and being very aware of the footsteps as I walk. And also, the thing that is most beautiful, another one of Thich Nhat Hanh's beautiful teachings, is that walk on this earth as if you're caressing your mother. The earth is our mother. So be aware of the way you're walking. Don't just scuffle along, you know, mindlessly. Be very present with your footsteps and be aware of what you're walking upon. And I think that's wonderful as well. It's easy to forget, so easy to forget and become heedless. Yeah. So I hope you enjoy some walking meditation. It's a wonderful practice because you can do it anywhere if you want to. You can just to the train, to the bus, from this building to that building. And it's very stabilizing and centering and good. Yeah. Well, I hope you all have a marvelous rest of semester and do brilliantly in your exams and don't get sick. Stay well, really. And thank you so much for setting this up, Olivia. I'm very grateful to you. I've enjoyed, I haven't seen Louis or Simon or Tara. All these are mysterious, their names, but the people I can see, it's wonderful to meet you.